Caregivers, have you ever felt like nothing? I mean, nothing is going right? Well, cheer up and welcome to Dave the Caregiver's Caregiver Radio Program, where you'll learn how to avoid that dreaded thing called caregiver burnout and how to survive the grief process. You know, with roughly 100 million caregivers in the U.S. and Canada alone, that's about a third of the population. That means that everyone probably knows someone caring for a loved one. Join Dave and his guests now and every Wednesday at noon Pacific time as they discuss avoiding caregiver burnout and surviving grief. So find a comfortable place to relax, kick up your feet, and prepare to feel better and to receive practical tips and tools that you can start using immediately to get you through today and every day so you can survive your tomorrows. But not just survive, but to live life fully and abundantly. Yes, you heard me right. That is a possible goal to achieve. And now, here's your host, Dave Nassani.
Hey, from L.A., a great big L.A. welcome to all my listeners out there in Radio Land. I'm Dave, the Caregiver's Caregiver, coming to you live from the Worldwide Block Talk Radio Network, as well as seven other audio and video platforms, including YouTube and iTunes. Our goal here is to do our very best to help you avoid that dreaded thing called caregiver burnout. I know it sounds nasty, doesn't it? It is nasty. We have an exciting show planned for you today, or as Ed Sullivan would say, a really big shoe. My lovely co-host Adrian could not make it today. Too many doctor appointments and physical therapy things. Today we will be interviewing the many faces of caregivers, Hector De La Torre, Executive Director of Health Studies at Transamerica. You will not want to miss this show. As I said, I'm your host, Dave Nassani, and this show is to caregivers of every single kind. And the one thing we know about caregivers is that they are caring and selfless and sacrificial souls, willing to give and give and give till there's nothing left to give. And then they burn out, and then they need a caregiver themselves. That's a sad scenario, isn't it? Well, that's why we're here, to break that cycle of abuse against ourselves. Self-care is a thing that's missing from the caregiver's life, and that's why we do what we do. Now, we can learn something from the airlines, because they tell us, in the event of an emergency, to put your own oxygen mask on first. Imagine that. That selfish, simple little idea. Before you attempt to help your loved one with their mask, they must have came up with that rule because too many people were blacking out and they couldn't help the ones that they were supposed to be helping. Anyway, that's what you got to do. Just imagine the plane going down, everyone screaming, your little bundle of joy gasping for breath. Whose mask are you going to help? That's the way we're wired. We're just kind of hardwired that way. Well, anyway, we talk about grief and loss here also and the devastating effects it can have on us. It throws us into this thing called the grief process. It could take days or weeks or months or years. Some people never get through it, but we can help you. There's only one way out of the grief process, unfortunately, but that's to go through it. You can't ignore it or go around it or over it. Got to go through it. And if you just follow our advice, you can go through it as quickly as humanly possible. I know everybody grieves in their own time, so we don't want to rush you if you need to take that time to grieve. But, you know, if it's been 7 years and you're still grieving, you know, maybe it's time to do something different. Anyway, I want to take this time and thank last week's guest, Susan Hodges, telling an amazing story in her new book, I Could Not Put It Down. I was up till 2 a.m. finishing this book because I just had to. That was a week ago. Anyway, just a reminder, you can listen to that interview and all of our interviews right here on this on our website, caregiverscaregiver.com. And we're so excited about my new bestseller. It's My Life 2, Reclaim Your Caregiver Sanity. I'm in the midst of my book tour, my media tour. We just did Palm Springs morning show called Desert Living. My wife joined me on that one, and we're headed tomorrow for Cedar Rapids, Iowa, and then Rock Island, Illinois, and Roanoke, Virginia, wherever the heck that place is, Bristol, Virginia, Columbia, South Carolina, Charleston, South Carolina, Mount Pleasant, South Carolina. I better like South Carolina. Knoxville, Tennessee, Savannah, Georgia, Johnson City, Tennessee, and then off to Atlanta, Georgia, and I'm meeting with a bunch of producers there from the top 30 markets in metropolitan areas, and I know I'm going to get a bunch of bookings from them, eventually getting to L.A., Chicago, and New York, where they say, if you can make it there, you can make it anywhere. This is where I say right, Adrian, because she's from Manhattan, but she's not here to say right. Anyway, my new book is available on Amazon and Barnes & Noble. We've already got a couple of book signings scheduled, one in Santa Clarita on November 11th and the other one this Friday, I think it is. No, Saturday in Mount Pleasant, South Carolina. So if you're in any of these areas, stop by and say hello. Buy a book. Buy a book for a caregiver. You might save their life. All right, enough of that. A big welcome to our guest, Hector De La... Wait a minute. What's your name, Hector?
Hector De La Torre.
De La Torre. You know, that was just on the tip of my tongue, and I committed the unpardonable sin of a radio show host forgetting the guest's name. Can you ever forgive me?
It's totally fine. I'm happy to be here.
You know, I usually like to ask my guests, so Hector, tell me in a minute or two, who are you and why were you put on this earth?
I'm the executive director, as you pointed out, of the Transamerica Center for Health Studies. We're a national nonprofit that tries to educate consumers and employers about health coverage, health insurance, and health and wellness. And we do it in a neutral, nonpartisan way. We just try to put the information out there so that people can make the best decision for themselves. We don't recommend things. We just lay it all out there and know that people will make good decisions for themselves if they have all
now,
of the
Hector,
information.
Hector, wait a minute. Is it possible to do anything in a partisan way? We can't even watch football in a partisan way. And you're talking about health insurance? How do you do that?
Well, if you don't think about what might be or what you'd like it to be, and you just describe what it is, that is our approach. So
what it is.
You know, this year we have had a lot of discussion going on in Washington, D.C., but in factual terms, very little has changed. So we continue to describe what is out there right now. If it changes,
it did change 6 years ago, so a lot has changed. But you're saying in 6 years, nothing has changed.
Just as of this year, with what's going on in Washington, several times.
So in the last 12 months, nothing has changed.
Exactly. That's what this year. And
except
so,
the providers are getting scarcer and scarcer. That has changed, hasn't it?
They're all still out there. They're still providing care, and so depending on your situation,
depending on the area,
and the situation. So, for example, a college student has different health options than your citizen. Someone who's working has different options from someone who's not. A veteran has different options from everyone else. And so that's what we try to focus on, is what are the options for you in your day-to-day life? So that's what we do. I have, tried to simplify health coverage for people, but also had a focus on health and wellness. And in that space, we have worked with Johns Hopkins on a workplace wellness study, which came out a couple of years ago. We were very, very happy to do that. Everything we do, we put on our website, we give it away for free. And so whether it's a workplace wellness work or the health insurance work, we put it up on our website and it's all for free. And folks can go to our website at transamericacenterforhealthstudies.org and see what we have. So that is our goal, our mission. And in terms of caregiving, came to it in two ways. One, I have had a personal experience with caring for my father, who passed away last summer. And then
what did he die from?
A heart attack. And
how old was he?
He was 75. And so I had that personal experience. Obviously, caregiving is a big component of health and wellness. And we also have at Transamerica Center for Health Studies, we have a sibling nonprofit called the Transamerica Center for Retirement Studies, also a national nonprofit. And so we decided that the place where our two areas of interest coincided and came together was caregiving.
Yeah.
Obviously, the retirement side for the significant number of seniors who are either caregiving or care recipients, and then obviously the health component that, that we cover. And so we decided that this was a good joint project for us, and we did this national survey, which we're very, very proud of, because there's too little discussion about caregiving in the public realm. And we thought that, you know, identifying who caregivers are and what they're going through was a good way to enter into this subject matter and to draw attention to it.
Well, that's very forward-thinking of Transamerica. How long have they been in the healthcare business? I always thought that they were just life insurance.
Again, we're a nonprofit. We're not Transamerica, the insurance company. But they do fund us.
Are they affiliated with each other?
Yeah, they do fund us, but they we are separate and apart.
So you're an arm, a severed arm.
No, we get funding from them, as we can get funding from other sources as well. But the important thing is that you know, we're a national nonprofit, and everything we provide is for the general public. It's a public service.
So do you you don't recommend insurance specifically, or
never.
Companies specifically, or types of insurance? Maybe you recommend that.
None of that. Well, we don't do that. We're a nonprofit, and so we focus just on getting the information out there to the general public, and they can make decisions on their own.
So you tell them and show them and give them what's available and say, this is it. You deal the cards, and then they have to figure it out. What if they have questions?
Yeah, well, we can, you know, sometimes we'll get emails and we'll answer specific questions. But in general terms, our information, again, is just informative for consumers and explain how things work more than how they can, you know, purchase this or that.
Well, it sounds like a great thing that you do. And I want to get to the questions, but my first question, you know, I'm thinking of this personally because I have got, you know, health insurance nightmares. I was paying $350 a month for myself. I'm 63 now, and 6 years ago, most of my life I was paying between $300 and $350 for just you know, a high deductible, and then it went up to $550. After Obamacare kicked in, and then the next year went up to $750, and then the next year went up to $950, and each time it went up, my deductible went up as well, and it's just me, and I'm healthy. And so let's say I were to ask you a question like, okay, I've got five plans here to choose from. I don't know which one to choose. This one's got a high deductible. This one's got a low deductible. Can you help me make a decision as to which one is the best for my situation? Would you do that?
Yes, and we do that. One of the things that we emphasize is, again, knowing your own situation. If you are healthy and you only go in once a year for your checkup, and there's a reasonable expectation that that's all you're going to be doing, then a high deductible plan is not is a good option. It's not a bad option because under normal circumstances, you won't need that much. If you are someone who has some chronic conditions, and we know that from our survey data, over half of Americans over 50 have a chronic condition, some more serious than others, that you need, for example, regular prescription medications, or you need regular visits to your doctor above and beyond an annual checkup or blood work, that kind of thing. Then having a high deductible plan is not such a great idea because on top of your premiums, you're going to have to pay out of pocket a significant amount. So two completely different situations, and there's an approach to take care of your health insurance based on your personal situation.
Okay, so what I'm hearing is that you do actually recommend companies or plans. You just do it indirectly and objectively.
It's an approach as opposed to a plan. I mean, we would never say buy this insurance or that insurance, but it's an approach.
But you would recommend a plan that's best for you, which in essence you're kind of recommending, because that's what people want. They want someone who's knowledgeable, who is objective, who they can trust, who doesn't work for the insurance company, to tell me which plan to take, which plan looks like it's best for me. And it sounds to me, even though you're saying you don't do it, it sounds to me that's like what you're doing, which is good.
Well, we're providing guidance, I guess, is more like it. Again,
I'm just not going to get you to admit that, but that's okay.
because we would never tell someone buy this particular insurance product.
I'm giving you a hard time. I'm sorry.
But it's important. It's an important distinction. The bottom line is to understand where you are in your personal situation and what fits.
Well, I appreciate your objectivity. Thank you. Now, let me ask you some questions. You've already mentioned that you have provided for your father at times. Did you ever suffer like burnout? I mean, how did it go? How long were you caregiving him, or did you actually get involved in primary caregiving?
It was several years, and I was essentially the primary caregiver. My brother lived out of state, and sister was not very connected, and so
you had the weight of it most
felt
of it.
Me, yeah, and I most of it was related to, you know, making sure he was going to his medical appointments.
He was living with you,
off and on, yes. Yes.
Okay. And so, when he wasn't, was he living alone? What was his arrangements?
Yeah. When he wasn't, he was living alone.
Okay. Very far away.
Yes.
Okay.
And so, he had a number of medical emergencies throughout that time, and so, you know, invariably I dropped everything and went, spent many a night in the hospital. Tried to make sure he had everything he needed and dealt with his.
How many miles away are we talking from each other?
Not a drive.
So you had to take a plane.
Yeah.
And did it affect your job or, you know, your health in any way?
Essentially, when he had these medical emergencies, I had to drop everything.
You had an understanding employer?
Yes. Fortunately, I was able to kind of make it work. And then, you know, on the day-to-day stuff, taking him to doctor appointments, et cetera, I would just carve out chunks of time be able to go and do that with him. So I was very fortunate during that time, because I know from the survey that we have just done, our caregiver survey, that there are consequences to being a caregiver when you're employed. 28% of caregivers who are employed or have been employed during their time as caregivers have experienced adverse actions taken by their employers as a result of their caregiver responsibilities. I never faced that, fortunately.
That is an unfortunate statistic, but you want to know an even more unfortunate statistic?
Yes.
Is roughly 30% of caregivers actually die before the person they're caring for dies. And that's according to eldercare.com. And that's a pretty sad statistic. And of the ones who actually don't die, they often become sicker than the ones they're caring for, needing a caregiver themselves. So, I mean,
without a doubt.
Yeah, these are just really, really sad statistics that people need to start, you know, waking up to. You know, I'm giving my talk, how to prevent your loved one's illness or disease from actually killing you. And that's what I'm doing on these shows that I'm doing during my book tour. And, you know, we're just trying to keep caregivers alive because they're dying, dropping like flies.
Absolutely.
And there's already a shortage of them.
In our survey, we found that over half of caregivers are neglecting themselves. 55% of their own health is taking a backseat to the health of their care recipient. And the same number, 55%, say that their caregiving duties leave them physically or emotionally exhausted, which is not a good way to live and to take care of yourself. Obviously, if you're not prioritizing your own health and you're doing something, whatever it is, that is leaving you physically and emotionally exhausted, you're not going to be able to remain healthy.
Those are great statistics. I'd love for you to send me, you know, the results of your survey since you just recently did it.
Yes.
Everyone
and
comes
it,
up
and
with
it's
a
available again on our website, like everything else we have for.
Okay. Remind me after we end the show. Give me all those links and stuff, unless it's on the email you already sent me. I think it is.
Yes.
Remind me, because everybody's got their own number of just how many caregivers there are in the U.S. today. I mean, some say 35 million, some say 45 million. I'm using the number 65 million because that's what the National Alliance of Caregivers uses. And so far, that's the highest number I've seen. I think it's closer to 100 million because, you know, the definition of caregiving is so narrow, but there are so many caregivers that don't, you know, fit the official description, but they're still caregivers and they're still doing the job and they're still burning out. So what's your number? Have any idea?
No, again, we just did the survey of over 3,000 caregivers nationwide, and that's where we got our data. We didn't get into an analysis of who's out there, but it's important, I think, to emphasize that caregivers go across all demographic segments. So
racial,
going
religious,
in,
you name it.
Absolutely, but age-wise, I think going into this, we assumed that most of the caregivers would be baby boomers and older.
Yep.
And it turns out that there's a substantial, over 1 in 5 were Gen X, and interestingly, a bigger
grandchildren
number,
in their 20s,
30% are millennials. Which is under 35. So I did not expect that millennials would be that heavily represented among caregivers. But it makes sense. They're looking after parents and grandparents in many cases. Gen
and they
X
were raised correctly as
Gen
opposed
X,
to just abandoning them.
Gen X tends to be caring more. They're the typical sandwich generation. You know, they're caring for both children who have long-term needs and parents and grandparents who have long-term. So
you can call some of those the club sandwich generation.
So the Gen X are definitely in between. The baby boomers mostly looking after parents, some grandparents, and then and each other in many cases. The older baby boomers are taking care of a spouse or partner or a family friend or loved one. So it's interesting to see the difference between the generations and who they're looking after.
Well, listen, we got to take a break, so don't go away, and we will be right back.
One Arm, One Leg, 100 Words, Overcoming Unbelievable Hardships is about Charlene, a stroke survivor. Back in 1996, Charlene was a healthy, normal, very active 52-year-old woman whose amazing talents resemble that of both a Martha Stewart and a Wonder Woman. But all that changed when she suffered a massive stroke that left her severely speech impaired and paralyzed on the right side. Who am I? My name is David. I've had the privilege of being Charlene's husband since 1975. We had a wonderful, fairy tale, storybook-like courtship that culminated in our marriage a year later. Charlene had just come out of a marriage where after 10 years, she received 2 black eyes and a broken nose by her former husband when he came home high on speed. Charlene believed in no second chances of any kind for abuse, so she left. Finding herself all alone in the world with her 5 and 10-year-old daughters, Cynthia Lorraine and Deborah Lynn, she started raising them by herself for the next 2 years. Then fate brought us all together. After falling in love with Charlene, Cindy, and Debbie, our love then produced Rebecca Elizabeth. We had a wonderful, normal life for the next 20 years. But today, things are very different for everyone. One Arm, One Leg, 100 Words, Overcoming Unbelievable Hardships is the amazing story of a woman's fight to survive. To survive all that life had thrown her way. Everyone who knows Charlene is thoroughly amazed at how she lives day by day, month by month, year by year, and with a smile on her face and hope in her heart that everything is going to be okay. Her faith in God is her foundation in this hope, that everything happens for a reason, and what doesn't kill her will make her stronger. She inspires everyone who meets her. Her accomplishments since her stroke are very impressive, often making us normal people look like whiners and complainers. So pick up your copy of One Arm, One Leg, 100 Words, Overcoming Unbelievable Hardships today. You won't be disappointed. Just hear what best-selling author Lynn Barrington has to say about it. If you think you have it bad, read this book. This is a beautiful, genuine story told from the heart. It's inspiring and easy to read. When you finish this book, you'll be able to look at your concerns in a new light. How about the reaction of 9-time Grammy and Dove Award recipient, the godfather of contemporary gospel Christian music, Andre Crouch? Charlene just won't let the promises of God go, and she has not let her circumstances get in the way of her faith. She's not just a survivor, she's more than a conqueror, as the Bible states. You'll be encouraged by her testimony, regardless of what you're going through. Available everywhere, but if you purchase your copy directly from the author's website, onearmoneleg100words.com, Charlene and David will personally autograph your copy. Enjoy!
And we're back with my guest, Hector De La Torres, Executive Director at Transamerica. Hector, welcome back to the show. Still
Thank
there?
You.
Oh,
yes.
Good. Love it when the guests don't go away during the break. So why did Transamerica Institute decide to do a survey of caregivers about caregiving in the first place?
Yes. Well, as I mentioned earlier, there are two nonprofits here, the Transamerica mm-hmm. Center for Health Studies, which I run, and the Transamerica Center for Retirement Studies, which is run by Catherine Collinson, a retirement expert. And so we wanted to work on something together, and we have both had caregiving experiences, as I mentioned, myself with my father, and Catherine with her grandmother. And so we both were kind of attuned to it in a way, I think, that you know, maybe someone who hadn't done caregiving would have been. And we decided that it was the perfect cross-section for retirement issues and obviously healthcare issues. And so that's why we did it. We wanted it to be national in scope, as everything we do is. And we wanted to kind of set a benchmark of where things are at with caregiving. And we focused on non-professional caregivers, folks who aren't necessarily being paid for it. In most cases, they have a job outside of the caregiving that they're providing, and how they juggle all of these things. You know, it was a labor of love for us, much like caregiving is for caregivers.
So how many questions, how extensive was the survey that you asked all these people? Is it like 100 questions, 50 questions, 25 questions?
It's probably around 50 questions.
Wow.
Most of them focused, not most of them. It was kind of split up, again, between health and retirement. So mm-hmm. a significant chunk are about their health and their outlook and the things that they're doing for their care recipient. And another chunk are about their financial status,
yeah,
and what they're doing for themselves financially, just like we ask what they're doing for themselves with their personal health. We were able to get some really great insights into this. And as I mentioned earlier, in terms of the work life, over half of the respondents had a job. And so besides the normal challenges that they have at work, that's made more difficult with the constant awareness of needing to provide care for a loved one. And as I mentioned in my personal experience, having to kind of set work aside and go and take care of my care recipient, in my case, my father.
More and more of these communities and states and government agencies are putting language like, you know, the paid leave or the unpaid leave for maternity. Now you're seeing the words caregivers show up in that language as well, which is a good thing. Just how extensive is that going on in the states? I mean, do you know anything about that?
Well, the awareness of FMLA is substantial, but it, by no means is it, you know, the overwhelming majority of caregivers, meaning you know, over half of them know about it, but not everyone. And so there is some education that needs to be done there. We asked about their their needs as caregivers in terms of information, and they wanted more resources. In our national survey, 88% of caregivers would like more information on one or more topics related to their caregiving, including managing stress, coping with caregiving challenges, available government benefits, that would be FMLA would be one of those, support groups, and employer-sponsored workplace benefits for caregivers. In many cases, employers have benefits for caregivers, and the caregivers don't even know about it. And a lot of this because, as you know, it's often isolating to be a caregiver, and these supports are vital for the health and well-being of caregivers.
Yeah, and it's so hard to give them tools that they can actually use. You know, most caregivers are so busy. You know, a lot of them don't have time to read a book, even though it's a great book and they might learn something from it. Many of them don't have time to listen to this podcast. You know, I can only suggest that they, you know, pop the show into their vehicle and listen while they drive, you know, do two things at one time. I'm impressed that you're able.
The commitment, you know, is significant for caregivers, as you well know. In our survey, 36% of all caregivers said that they spend 100 or more hours per month providing care, and the median 50 hours spent per month, which again is juggled with other responsibilities, as we mentioned previously. Most have full or part-time jobs. So, you know, 50 to 100 hours as the norm is a big chunk of time for people. And so when you have that on top of a work and other responsibilities, it really can be overwhelming.
And I assume one of your questions had something to do with, are you spending money out of your pocket caring for your loved one?
Absolutely. We did do that. And the answer is, that 75% of caregivers do not receive any form of financial assistance or payment for their work. So it really is a labor of love. So that's kind of, that sets the baseline. That lets you know who we're talking about here. At the same time, caregivers are spending $150 per month median. So we don't use average because sometimes that's skewed. Yeah. It's skewed. But $150 per month median out of pocket to cover expenses for their care recipient. This result.
So the low could be zero and the high could be $300.
Well, or the high could be, it could be much, much higher. But $150 is right in the middle there, as opposed to an average where you can skew based on having something be really high, really low. But that's a lot of money out of pocket when you're
especially,
compensation at all that you're getting, you're spending $1,800 a year median, right? To cover these expenses. That's a lot of money out of pocket. Again, if you're if you're working. And then if you're not working, because a substantial number, not the majority, but a substantial majority are not working outside of the home, then, you know, where's that $1,800 coming from? This is another heavy burden that caregivers are facing, and it results in 43% of caregivers, almost half, saying that just getting by is their current financial priority.
Wow. And, you know, I'm a businessman, and so I'm very impressed that anybody would take the time to answer 50 questions and give you what did you entice them with? What reward? I mean, was it a gift card? Was it
no? We don't do that. We partner with Nielsen Harris, the polling, and they do the survey for us. We don't go over the phone. These are online surveys that they do
online.
Their own normal panels. Nielsen is famous for the TV ratings.
And they get nothing in return for taking, 30 minutes or 15 minutes and answering these questions?
No, they have these panels of randomly selected people that they use for their survey work, not just for us, for everybody else. Mm. And they run this survey for us. Harris is a famous polling company, and they're now a combined company. Nielsen Harris runs for us. We don't, other than shaping the questions, we do not participate in the survey itself. They're the professionals.
Nice. What suggestions do you recommend for trying to reverse this trend of health declining? How do we turn that around and get caregivers healthier?
Well, I think in general, the issue with caregiving is we don't talk about it enough out in the open. Out in society, I think it's kind of taken for granted. Yes, it's taken for granted. Even within public policy circles, you know, they'll talk about childcare, they'll talk about schools, they'll talk about healthcare for seniors, but we don't talk about caregiving enough.
Yeah.
So again, it is a very isolating experience, and the time spent caregiving adds up. We found out in our survey, 74% of caregivers have been providing care for one or more years. That's a long time to be providing it. And a substantial 27%, over one out of four, have provided care for 5 years or more. 5 years. These are the numbers. These are the lived experiences of caregivers, and we just don't talk about it enough. We need to team up. Those of us that are in this space, you know, we're new to it, but obviously AARP has been at it, and we're working with them to see how we can partner with them. There is also a nonprofit group called REACT, which is Respect a Caregiver's Time. There's the Longevity Institute at Stanford. There's the Age Lab at MIT. Lots of folks are looking into this and working on this, and we just all need to band together and amplify the message, much like what you're doing with this show. So we need to talk about it more and identify the issues, which we've done some of that here today, and then start coming up with solutions.
Does your nonprofit group, sorry to interrupt, does your nonprofit group have a resource list of, you know, websites or support groups or books or
it's,
podcasts?
Yeah, funny you should say that. What we've done, and we're working on it right now, it'll be out at the end of the month in time for National Caregiver Month, is to do a guide. Based on what I mentioned earlier that caregivers say they want, the kind of information that they want, we are putting together a guide that has much of that information available for them. Again, it's not exhaustive. We don't expect it to be the be-all and end-all, but we want to address the things that caregivers are telling us in this survey that they need. and we'll put it out there. And again, like everything else we do, it'll be available for free.
Great. Well, that's awesome. Let's take another break and we'll wrap this up when we get back. So don't go away.
Anytime we suffer loss, we grieve. And a lot of people don't realize what even the grief process is. But it could be 5 to 7 steps ranging from denial, I don't believe this is happening, anger, oh my gosh, I'm so upset this is happening, to a form of bargaining, how can I get out of this, to depression, which is a very serious thing because that often leads to suicide. And then finally, after you realize you have no more control over your situation and you're totally okay with the new normal that it brings, that wonderful, wonderful place called acceptance.
Being a caregiver takes a special person with passion and compassion. But even you can become a little burned out from time to time. The Caregiver's Caregiver Radio Show was developed to help you overcome obstacles, adversity, and burnout, as well as just having a place to rest, relax, and recharge your batteries. We've all been there, and you're not alone. Now, you can take the Caregiver's Caregiver with you. Get the top 25 radio shows in convenient form that plugs right into your USB car stereo or computer. Learn the techniques, tips, and encouragement we all need to better handle the day-to-day challenges. For around $1 per show, just $29.77, get the credit card-sized USB card to have with you anytime you need a caregiver's pick-me-up. Just go to DaveTheCaregiversCaregiver.com and order yours today. Go to DaveTheCaregiversCaregiver.com now. Consider it an investment in you and ultimately an investment in them.
And we're back with Hector De La Torres, and we're talking about caregiving, and we're talking about self-care, and wow, there's just so much issues that caregivers have. You know, you and I both have a heart for them, and you know, we do this out of passion, it's a labor of love, and it's rewarding when we see that our efforts are actually doing some good, you know, and actually listening to us and taking advice and starting to, you know, call that friend that they haven't called in 4 years and ask them to go to a movie or to go get a massage or to start asking for help to have people come in so they can go take an hour break and, you know, have a relaxing coffee at Starbucks or get their hair done or get their nails done or get a massage. You know, these are things that caregivers just don't naturally think about, but
absolutely, especially if you're the primary caregiver, you feel the weight of the world on your shoulders, and you feel responsible for your care recipient. One of the things our survey found, and it kind of gets back to your first point when we started today's show, that 9 out of 10 non-professional family caregivers feel it's important to provide a good quality of life for the person they care for. They like helping them, and they enjoy spending time with the care recipient. So it really is out of love for that care recipient. Unfortunately, because it is so outward focused, you know, focused on that other person, they really do neglect their own personal health. You kind of alluded to it in your comments just a minute ago. Approximately 1 in 6 caregivers, 17%, indicate that their general health has gotten worse or declined since they became a caregiver. Again, this is not surprising considering what I referenced earlier, that caregiving duties leave so many of them, of the caregivers, completely overwhelmed.
And that's what shocks me. Most caregivers know this about themselves. You know, we have a Facebook page and the comments all the time. Yeah, I'm burned out. Yeah, I haven't had a vacation in 10 years. Yeah, I need a break. And like I say about my book, I says, you know, this book is perfect for caregivers who know that they need to put their needs first, but they just don't know how. There is another group of caregivers out there who totally disagree with me. They think that it's selfish for any caregiver to consider themselves equal with their loved one, that their loved one has to come first, and we should get whatever crumbs are left over, if any. Some of these caregivers are lucky if they get crumbs. But I don't think I'm ever going to reach those people, because their minds are kind of made up. And it reminds me of the person who's overweight and doesn't eat well, and they have a heart attack, and the doctor says, you know, you got to change your lifestyle. And amazingly, 50% of those people don't change a thing. And then they have their second heart attack. And of those people, another 50% don't change a thing either until they have their third heart attack. It's like, hello, how many warnings do you need?
Well, and clearly in our survey of all these figures, these responses that we're getting, they really do realize, caregivers really do realize how bad this is for them.
Yeah, they do.
They, you know, 88% of them want more information because they want to know how they can fix it, and how they can get a little more balance and how they can get a little relief. And so I think that's the most important thing. If you're not the primary caregiver, so this would be for non-primary caregivers or other people
right.
who know a caregiver in their life, it's exactly what you described. It's stepping in and saying, hey, take a few hours, you know, or overnight, and get out of here. Go, you know, go, yeah. Go if you can't, you know, go stay at a motel for a night in a nice
right.
place. Go watch a movie. Go, you know, go to a doctor's appointment for yourself. All of these things that can help the caregiver refresh their batteries. Or take care of themselves on
yeah.
a really basic level.
You know, and it is easier said than done, because we don't realize that they are overwhelmed. You know, on their kitchen table are bills stacked, you know, 10 inches high. And they look at that and say, I don't have time to do anything. I don't have time to go take coffee. I don't have time for a massage. You know, the dishes in the sink are piled up. You know, I got to get to this. I got to get to that. Oh, now, you know, I got to change your diaper again, you know. And it's like, oh my gosh, you know, so I try not to overwhelm them with more information. And it's good that they're requesting more information from you, but that doesn't tell me that it's working. Sometimes you just got to spoon feed them a little teaspoon, a half a teaspoon at a time. You know, try this today. Just try to do this. Just leave the bills on the table. Leave, you know, the dishes in the sink. Because you know what? If you get sick and the ambulance has to come for you, guess what? You just got a vacation. And it was a involuntary vacation. And so we choose to not make decisions, you know, that we make ourselves out of our free will, voluntarily take some time off. But we will gladly wait until the body shuts down and it forces us to take some time off. You know, I don't know about you, but I'd rather do it voluntarily, because I can plan it. I can do it on my time frame, because usually when tragedy strikes, it's never convenient, and it's always at the wrong time.
Absolutely, it's never going to be convenient. And again, because of the love and the focus that they have on their care recipient, their loved one, they you know feel selfish for.
Right.
thinking about themselves, but you know, the numbers that you've cited, the results that we've gotten in our survey show how damaging this is to them, and they need help, and they need to ask for it.
Yeah.
Those of us who are around family members who are doing caregiving need to step in and just, you know, offer and not take no for an answer,
yeah.
That they get a little break here and there on a regular basis
yeah.
for them. One really simple thing would be to just go out for a walk once a day. Half an hour of walking is one of the best things you can do for your personal health.
Yeah.
It
yeah.
clears your head. It's physical yeah. exercise, and it does wonders for you know, for your basic health. So that would
park
be something
farther
really...
away. Use the stairs instead of the elevator. There's so many things you can do.
Yeah, really, really basic things where you can be more physically active. The outside of the home can really help you in your personal health. Yeah. And it's a very simple thing, but it means carving out that time every day.
Yeah. And for those who don't want to leave the stack of dishes or don't want to leave the stack of mail, you know what? If the ambulance comes, you're going to leave them anyway. So you might as well leave them and have fun instead of leave them and be on oxygen.
Yes. Yeah. So this has to be part of the dialogue. You know, we talked earlier about policy, public policy, and how we could help caregivers better. There are some measures in Congress and probably in state houses in the country to help caregivers more, possibly financially or with, you know, maybe tax breaks. But
wouldn't that be nice?
We need to have more of that dialogue in order for those issues to rise to the top. Otherwise, they're just sitting, you know, in the hopper with other legislation that's never going to go anywhere.
It needs to become politically correct to talk about caregiving and caregivers. You know, we need to honor them the same way we honor our military and our veterans. You know, everybody just holds them in high regard, and they should be held in high regard. But you know what? The caregivers are the same ones who should be also held in high regard because they're both doing amazing jobs.
Absolutely. They are providing an indispensable service because
and saving governments billions and billions and billions of dollars that they don't
exactly. have. Exactly. It's saving the government billions of dollars in, for example, nursing home care because many folks would end up there. It's saving the government billions of dollars and all of us. We were talking about health insurance earlier. If these folks are sicker and are not getting this care, then their chronic conditions will get worse. Yeah. And
now you got two people down. So you just double the cost of health care, one for the recipient who now no longer has a caregiver, and the other one for the caregiver themselves.
Yes. And the emergency room care and other health care that is more intensive and more expensive. And then we all end up paying for it. Society ends up paying for it through our health insurance premiums because we're paying for these people who are sicker. So it's a vicious circle. And so we're getting this incredible benefit from caregivers as a society, and we need to acknowledge that.
Well, Hector, we've come to the end of our hour. How can someone get a hold of you or get that more information that you say they keep requesting?
Yes, it is www.transamericacenterforhealthstudies. I know it's a lot, but if you Google it or put it in search engine, it'll come up. .org, transamericacenterforhealthstudies.org. That is where you can find this caregiving work. And like I said, in November, you will be able to find our caregiver guide there, as well as
awesome.
To link other folks who are doing wonderful work on caregiving.
Where are you going to be in the month of November, Caregivers Month? Are you attending any events?
Not as of right now. We're working on I have a couple presentations at the end of October, one on caregiving and the other on cost drivers in healthcare. So I'm very much focused on October right now, and we'll see what November brings.
Yes, I know there's a big event in Chicago the first week of November, I believe it is, with Denise Brown's organization. Might want to look that up and check it out.
All right.
Where are you located?
We're based in Los Angeles.
Los Angeles.
We're a national organization, so we go anywhere, anytime.
Well, I appreciate all you do. I appreciate you coming on the show. And thank you so much. I'm excited that you're joining the team of helping caregivers care for themselves.
Thank you very much, Dave. This was wonderful.
I want to thank everybody for coming on the show. We'll see you every Wednesday at noon. And just want to remind you, caregivers, caregiver.com, go there and take our free quiz. Are you a candidate for burnout? And if you do, we're going to send you a copy of my first book absolutely free, One Arm, One Leg, 100 Words, Overcoming Unbelievable Hardships. And I just want to thank everybody for all your support, especially in our new book. And if you haven't bought it yet, you absolutely need this book. And just I'm going to steal a line from The Godfather. I'm going to make you an offer you can't refuse. I'm going to lower the Kindle price from $10 down to 99 cents of my brand new book. And it won't be that way for long. So go to Amazon.com. It's only on the Kindle version. And just type in my name, David Nassani, or type in the title of the book, It's My Life Too. And get that before the sale goes away. And if you're in the Santa Clarita area in Los Angeles on November 11th, Veterans Day, all you caregiver veterans and all you caregivers, come out and meet me and let's talk and let's have a good time and buy a book and I'll sign your book and buy a caregiver book. Like I said, you know, I'm talking about how to prevent your caregiver's sickness or disease from actually killing you. If you buy a caregiver a book, you might be saving their life. And then South Carolina at the Mount Pleasant Barnes & Noble out there on Friday the 13th. Don't let that freak you out. This Friday, we're going to be there. And we're currently working on plans for the last week, actually the first weekend in November in Johnson City, Tennessee. So if you're in that area, keep on the lookout. Thanks again, and I'll see you next week. Bye-bye.
Thank you for joining Dave, the Caregiver's Caregiver Radio Show. Make sure you tune in every Wednesday at noon Pacific Time and anytime afterwards on podcast to catch more of Dave and his tips to caregivers on avoiding burnout and surviving the grief process right here on the Worldwide Block Talk Radio Network. Goodbye.